Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. It's time for this week's Friday Morning GM with co-host Vasil Ricos. Vas, how you doing?
I'm struggling, Ken. I'm struggling, just like a lot of folks in the Ravens Nation here. Just a disheartening loss, a soul-searching loss. You go back looking for answers. It's not as easy as, hey, they need more wide receiver, or they need more this or that. Or it's just the clock's ticking on the Lamar era. And it's tough, and it's tough to put your finger on what they need to do to get over that hump. But I'm here to do some catharsis with you.
All right, disheartening to be sure. Going through the film was helpful because I think the Ravens really dominated the game in every way except for a few plays where they turned the ball over, dropped the football, whatever it might have been. Very little that I would point to as being a poorly coached element of the game, with the possible exception of the timing of the last drive and not really taking the time to juice the clock. I think they lost about 60% of the chance they had to win if they scored and made two by not doing it with, say, less than 10 seconds left. So I could take a lower chance of scoring on that drive in the name of scoring at the end of regulation as opposed to being early.
Football is such a tough game to divvy out the blame game pie because everything is so interconnected and interrelated. Yep. As we know, several of the position groups have symbiotic relationships with others. But, is it the head coach's responsibility to help the players execute and perform and not make mistakes? Or is that on the players? Or do you need better players? I mean, it's really tough to parse out. So I really am, in a way, probably more than any other loss in many years, kind of at a loss, just grasping at straws in a way after this one. It is a tough one.
This would be higher. This would be worse than, say, the 06 loss or the 11 loss or the 19 loss or the 23 loss.
I wouldn't say it's worse than – maybe worse than – I think 06 might be the worst because we knew that was the end of the era, so to speak, with the McNair era. And that was, just such a – I still put that one really up high on the tough losses. 11, you're saying, okay, we're going to run it back. We're so close. We have the pieces. And 18 or 19, I should say, they were a young team. This is a little bit of a different situation. It's just what they need to change. What do they need to do? Can you just keep going down the same trough? And, is it going to work out or is it not? They fielded so many dominant teams, MVP, now the third caliber or third MVP caliber season from a quarterback, the most Pro Bowlers in the league, the highest DVOA, and you just can't even make the Final Four. It's tough. It really is tough.
Yeah, obviously, they play the games for a reason, but playing that game on the road really sucked is one of the things. And last year, even though they played the game at home, though, they lost it as well to Kansas City. Obviously a very tough loss. Well, we're going to go through free agency because that's going to be a very significant factor for the 2025 Ravens, just as we expected it to be for the 24 Ravens, who were remarkably rebuilt well, both, I thought, on the fly in terms of the talent they assembled to start the season. Incredibly great choices in terms of who they kept and who they discarded. We can go through that a little bit if we want to, too.
Sure.
And then also during the season, just the rebuild of the defense, fairly remarkable in terms of how it was handled this year, much like 2019 in a little bit. But maybe we start
you can't walk away from this game saying there was one personnel deficiency or there was this one position group. If they would have invested more here, you know, I do think the Zay Flowers absence played a part. Buffalo blitzed on 42% of plays, I believe, which was their highest of the season. I doubt they reached that number if they had the fear of Flowers hitting them over the top. But it was a well-built team. I didn't mean it cut you off.
No, it's no problem. The thing you mentioned is actually very important, but the plays where they rushed 5+, 3.1 yards per play and three turnovers. So it was all of the bad news basically happened there. When the Bills rushed 4, Lamar threw for 17.1 yards per play. So all right. Let's start off. Let's talk Todd Monken, because it's one of the immediate coaching needs, but there are other ones, of course. What's your feeling about the likelihood that he'll be gone?
I think I said 40% last week. Now that some of the vacancies have been filled, I'll probably go down to 25% to 30%. I know he's still in the mix in Jacksonville. I think that might make some sense with Trevor Lawrence. I also wouldn't be shocked if he got into the mix in Dallas, which seems to be a little bit of a cluster. They waited for a week to get rid of McCarthy, and then they were trying to woo Deion Sanders, who's apparently not. Anyway, that whole situation. So, yeah, I don't think it's likely, but more likely than not, but I don't think it's an absolute to do a return.
All right. Other topics. The Ravens signed a bunch of futures contracts yesterday or 2 days ago, I guess it was, and it included the one name on the list that was a little bit surprising was Anthony Miller being re-signed. Others on that list surprising to you?
No, not necessarily. I mean, these are low-risk moves. These are basically camp bodies, and I think Anthony Miller might still have a little something left in the tank as a back end of the roster receiver. I like what he brings, potentially. I like him coming out at least. It's been a few years now. But, I think all good teams are doing their futures contracts at this point of year.
All right. Zay Flowers, after the season, we hear a little bit that surgery may be required. Now, Harbaugh says just a cleanup procedure if anything is required. That would be okay if there was some sort of loose tissue were there or whatever. Of course, that also means that the injury might have been more serious than they were letting on.
Mixed signals for sure from Flowers. He said he thought he had a good chance that they would have advanced the play. Harbaugh intimated in the presser that he almost seemed like it was a very good chance, like a probable chance. You want to get Zay back on the field as soon as you can. I don't think he has much left to prove after posting a Pro Bowl season, but you certainly want him available to your team as far as training, and keep our fingers crossed on that one.
Yes, I'm mildly concerned about it. I mean, obviously the play of Flowers and Bateman was at a tremendous level. The EDC and Harbaugh press conference happened today. Yesterday. And lots of questions about a variety of things, but Deontay Johnson was one of the topics that came up. And EDC basically came forward and said, you know, didn't work out, obviously. Didn't think that it was a lot to give away for the flyer that they took on Johnson, but obviously it didn't work out as it went down.
Yeah. I mean, he termed it a low risk, high reward, but the risk was certainly magnified by the personality. I thought his comments on Eddie Jackson were telling, and I'm really hats off to Eric DaCosta lifting the veil on his decision-making process. He's certainly a man of respect that everyone should respect. But saying that Eddie Jackson, you know, he thought that the fit was good, the price was good, but he didn't take into account the fact that Eddie might not want to play a backup role. And he said he basically learned a lesson from that. So I thought that was interesting. The other big, not necessarily interesting, I think we all know this. We've been talking about this on this show for several weeks, but safety and getting a safety that will allow Kyle Hamilton to get back into a playmaking role closer to the line of scrimmage was pointed out by Eric DaCosta. So those were the big takeaways. It's a lot of lip service in these. It's not how it used to be necessarily when you had Bisciotti up on the podium and Ozzie dropping pearls. But, you know, it was a good one.
I thought one of the other things that was kind of interesting was the directness with which the Brandon Stevens situation was addressed. It does appear that Brandon Stevens is going to be allowed to walk. You know, he said basically he'll have his chance to test free agency, and it wasn't in the way that's often said, which is we're giving him a price. We'll give him a contract to take to the market. If he can do better, by all means. And if he doesn't, we'd like to have him back, or maybe even discussions about how he could come back in a safety role. I do think at a minimum, Brandon Stevens is going to need to check what his value is at the cornerback position before he's willing to come back tail between his legs and say basically, hey, how about I convert to safety if that's what you need me to do? And I'm not sure it's really what the Ravens need either. But he was playing there a little bit at the end of the season. So obviously he was their next man up. The Ravens have other options. They have the draft. They have, you know, free agency in terms of going for a cheaper player. But Stevens, I think, is on the list of possibilities.
Yeah, he's a right player, right place, right price player to me. I will circle back to that in the next segment. DaCosta said he thought he was a successful pick as a third rounder. Basically had 2 years of starting from him. One was very strong. One was a little bit mediocre. Any thoughts on that evaluation of the pick overall?
Overpriced, I would say, for what it was. You'd hope to get that out of maybe a fifth round pick. And if your average third round pick was that, you'd probably actually be unhappy. Like 1.5 years of starting, or one quality year and one bad year. I think that's too much. In the case of Brandon Stevens specifically, I think it was a significant overdraft. I think I don't know who they thought was going to take him away. It didn't seem like that was going to materialize. And his chance really came around in some ways out of some good fortune by him, because he wasn't really in the Ravens' plan to be the starting corner in that year. They had Rock Ya-Sin, and they had other players that they thought were going to be ahead of him. Yep. Yeah, Darby was ahead of him in a lot of ways. Of course, not really, because he played every snap on the right side. But he really got his opportunity and he made the most out of it in 23, and that's terrific.
That's a good way to view it, Ken. I tend to agree with you. You know, when you hear the clips from the castle, and they like to put a little shine on things and maybe a little bit more optimistic than they really should be. But you know, Harbaugh seems content, seems happy. It's tough when you keep knocking your head into the wall. I mean, as far as in the postseason, and they thought it was a successful season. Ryan Mink and Garrett Downing said they thought it was a successful season. I'm not sure I completely agree.
Who cares what they say? What do you think?
I'm not sure I agree. You know, they signed Derrick Henry. He was supposed to be the missing piece that took pressure off Lamar Jackson to get him over the hump in the postseason. And he had 2.5 yards of carry in the first half of the postseason game. And they made it one step shorter than they did last year. So I'm not saying it's a failure of a season, certainly. It was a good season. We enjoyed the season. But I would definitely not say it's a resounding success either.
Okay, so let's start with Derrick Henry for a moment. I don't think there's any way I could paint his season as anything but a success, as the signing as anything but a success, because I think – they had other ways to spend $10 million that would have been more likely to be a waste of it. So my big question was, should they have re-signed Jadeveon Clowney or gotten? And I asked a lot of people that before the season. And frankly, you know, this is a big swing and a miss by me, is that Clowney, while he would have addressed a different need and been a guy who would have been a third outside linebacker the Ravens maybe could have relied on, and he didn't have a great year. Playing in Carolina, so you know
he was marred with injuries this year, so that should be taken into account.
But you know, he's an older player too, so injuries got to be one of the things you fear. And Clowney's had an injury history, so that's got to be one of the things you fear. In the case of Henry, you know, he came through with a healthy season. People, the people who are surprising me now, and people are saying why shouldn't he get, you know, 2,000 yards next year with this offensive line? All they got to do is rebuild a couple. Henry's, you know, he's got to start from zero. He's got to have a great offseason. He's got to basically be healthy again, which is a ton of luck. And that's one of the reasons why the Ravens season is so frustrating, is that they were very healthy for the most part. Now, Flowers injured at the end is one thing. Their misery is no worse than the bulk of NFL teams, including the ones who are still alive right now.
Better injury.
Yeah. But anyway. So just finishing off with Henry, no doubt about a second season. I where would you stand on extending him?
You know, it's a risk. He is basically into uncharted territory at this point. Maybe Adrian Peterson was the one other tailback who was able to keep Father Time at bay. I'm not saying he can't. I'm just so tired of going into the postseason, having a matchup where you're supposed to run the ball down the team's throat, and no matter who the back is, not being able to do it. And it's five or six times in a row now, or I guess four or five times in a row now. And it just really makes me wonder if over-investing or investing significant assets into the running game is an obsolete strategy at this point.
Well, that's I think that's a legitimate question, boss, is whether or not investing in a running back, generally speaking, is a good thing. And I don't think Henry, who is kind of a joker in a 52-card deck, drawing that happens to is one that really puts me over the hump that it's a great idea to invest in running back. I'm not saying that at all. I also would not characterize the game the Ravens had running the football as a failure. I mean, I think they were very successful running the football this game. Well, they run for 5.2, 5.5 yards per carry, whatever it was. Everybody who ran the ball effectively. Lamar did, Henry did by the end of the game, admittedly. And they did have a little feast or famine component to their game. They got a minus one from the 2-yard line that was very costly. They had another minus one on what was it, third and two or something that left them punting, I think. So they had, you know, a couple of different places where it didn't work out for them, but I can't say that they didn't run the ball effectively. I think they did run the ball effectively in the game. I think they passed the ball even more effectively. And, you know, people are going up to the podium after the game and asking Harbaugh, why didn't Henry get more than 16 carries? There's nothing. I don't have a problem with play balance in the game. Yeah. I think it basically, I don't know what you want. If you see that game of offensive football played and you take out the turnovers, which you can't, and say, boy, I'm really unhappy with the way the Ravens move the football.
No, that's a very valid point, Ken. Completely agree with that. I'm grasping for answers. It's tough. But when you see the matchup, you see all the national pundits, you're listening to the Bill Simmons podcast, and they're saying it's not Lamar against Josh Allen. It's Lamar and Derrick Henry against Josh Allen. And everybody expects – and it's just been a series now of the Chargers game in 18, the Titans game in 19, the Buffalo game in 20. And the prognosticators anticipate that the Ravens are going to be able to just run over a team and the game script gets away from them. Maybe they start slow and it doesn't materialize. It's a combination of a lot of factors. I definitely think Derrick Henry has more left in the tank. I wouldn't necessarily extend him back to the original point, but I definitely think he's earned to play out the rest of his contract, and we'll see where we are this time next year.
Fair enough. And I think that would be my way of going also. I wouldn't go the extension route unless there's value there. I can't see that at all. I think Henry wants to play this next year, maybe hit free agency again. He probably really wants to sign with the Ravens, but I don't know that that's just going to work out for both sides. The Ravens do not have a lot of money, and Henry is effectively is another free agent that they'd be signing if they do that. Let's talk about the other big question, and I'm going to have a series of pods on this, and I don't know whether it's going to be one or three or what it'll be, but we're going to talk about John Harbaugh, and obviously he's coming up on a lame duck year, which means he'll almost certainly be extended before the season, or the Ravens and he might part ways. He's coming, goes into 2025, the last year of his contract. The last year he was signed for a 3-year extension the year before his final year, or the offseason before his final year. So I would, if I had my best guess, I would say re-sign him through 2028 right now is the most likely course the Ravens will take. Where are you on that?
Likelihood, I would probably tend to agree with you. it's a little bit different than college football, where a lame duck college coach is negatively impacted in recruiting. A lame duck NFL coach doesn't necessarily have that recruiting pressure. The players are picked and they pretty much have to sign with the team that they are with. I personally would like to see John Harbaugh have some more playoff success before committing to another period, 3-year period with him. I think he's 4-8 since Ray Lewis retired and Anquan Boldin was traded in the postseason. So that's not, you know, automatic re-sign playoff resume. Sometimes, and I know you've been mentioned on other podcasts, you're looking for people to take the negative view on Harbaugh. So I'll give it a couple points here. I do think sometimes his preference for high character players and devalued position players can be a negative impact on roster construction. We've seen several of his hand-picked draft picks not pan out. I also watch Hard Knocks, and we saw turmoil in the locker room this last season, and I do question whether his message resonates with the 2025 era players. So as far as a organizational method and what I would predict, I would say Steve Bisciotti has shown tremendous loyalty to John Harbaugh, and he's likely to do the same this offseason. But for me personally, I would like to see a little bit, maybe another conference championship game appearance next year before paying an extension.
Okay, since you're saying you want Harbaugh for 25, you're not saying get rid of Harbaugh now. You're saying I want Harbaugh for 25.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then I think we're at a point where it's Steve Bisciotti's money. And when he spends cap dollars, he's spending my dollars, as I always say as a season ticket holder. He's spending my freaking dollars, okay? Those are the ones that I fund to see a good football field on the team. But I'm all for Steve spending the dollars he sees appropriate to build an organization with the culture and whatnot that he wants. So if that means, you know, signing Harbaugh for, say, an extra $42 million over 3 years, deciding after 2026, say, that he no longer likes the result, it's Steve's money. I'm not complaining about it.
I agree there. The dead money from coaches is only felt by the owner. So I certainly agree with that point there. I wouldn't be opposed to it, but I'm just maybe not quite as married to the traditional Harbaugh Ravens way, because I do think it's a little bit different than the Billick Ravens way, going back way back when. And you know, I just don't want to get in another period where we saw from 2015, 16, 17, 18, or I guess not 18, but 17, where it's just keep on keeping on, and you kind of get in a cycle of wild card divisional round type of mediocrity. And I know not everybody agrees with me. I put a poll out on Twitter a couple of days ago, and it was about 47% of the fans are in favor of going all in. 54% of the fans, 53-54, are in favor of, you know, maintaining continuity. They would not sacrifice a playoff appearance for a all-in push. But I don't want to just sign that check for another period of time.
It's not a Harbaugh decision, though, is it? Isn't that really a EDC or Bisciotti decision? So you're really saying you want to get rid of the owner if you're saying I don't want to go all in.
I personally think that Harbaugh has a lot of sway in those conversations, and I'm not a fly on the wall, but that's the way from an outsider's perspective. I think Harbaugh is kind of steering the ship in that regard.
I would disagree. I think EDC has much more sway in that, and that's an issue. But you'd be an interesting voice in this if you can make time. And I know you're very busy right now. I'd love to have you on the Harbaugh show, because it's something where I think we need to relativize things very carefully. So if somebody says, for instance, one of the things that can come up that I really think is a nit on a Nat's ass is Harbaugh talking about him making frivolous or unsuccessful challenges. So if they want to look and say, well, he's lost, you know, 80% of his challenges over the last 6 years or whatever, it's really just not that big a deal in the grand scheme of things relative to other things that a coach does in terms of the game. But this, you know, the culture or the decision and the ultimate decision that you're talking about is whether to go level or go for the roller coaster parity approach, where you make all in moves, is a huge organizational question. That's an enormous organizational question. And you're a fan of the Baltimore Ravens, and the owner and the and the general manager and everybody who represents the organization has basically said, we want to win a lot of football games. We want a high cash spend every year, but we don't want to go all in and risk our chance for next year or the year after or the year after. That's a tough spot to be in as Vasilerikos, as a fan of the Ravens.
Well, you know what? I'm a little bit of a contrarian myself. I like to think outside the box. I do think the Ravens would have been more successful over the last 13 years if they would have used the NFL's parity model against itself and tried to outsmart it in a way. That's neither here nor there. But John Harbaugh has been a tremendous asset to this team. When I think of the Baltimore Ravens, I think the younger fan base thinks of the Ravens way as a John Harbaugh way, and it wasn't always that way. Ozzie Newsome and Brian Billick and the first championship had a little bit different philosophy, a little bit different style. And the funny thing is, as far as in-game, I think John Harbaugh is an A-plus in-game coach. And some of these folks you find on Twitter with hashtag fire John Harbaugh at the end of their name are saying he's a terrible – I think he's a tremendous in-game coach. That's not my gripe at all. It's more of the construction and philosophy is where maybe there might be a little room for improvement there.
Value your opinion on this, and what I'd like to do is I'd like to hear you kind of carve that into a loss of value component for me. And you don't have to even be on the show, but if you do it, if you just send me notes on this, then I'll bring it up and we can discuss it as a panel on this Fire John Harbaugh show. And that'll be fun. All right. Absolutely. Well, let's talk about the remainder of the coaching staff a little bit, because that's an area I think where the Ravens, you know, got raided after 2023. A lot of their good young coaching talent got taken away from them. Denard Wilson, Mike McDonald in particular,
Weaver.
And those are, you know, three great leaders plus coaches who were just exceptionally good. I think the Ravens need to make an all out effort. And this is again, Bisciotti's money, so I'm happily spending it to go out and rebuild their position coach ranks. And one of the things I've said is that that Bisciotti has been exceptional at creating additional positions and paying for them that are not necessarily traditional to bring an additional very talented person in-house. In fact, that's how Greg Roman got in originally.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The more Bisciotti wants to spend on the coaching staff, the better. As you said, that's not a capped resource. Mm-hmm. The three coaches they brought in, offensive line coach, what was the other one? Inside linebackers and safeties, I believe, were all, not only were they in college last year, but they weren't even positional coaches, if I recall. They were assistants or adjunct. And to the Ravens' credit, they were one of the best teams in the league this year. They had their growing pains earlier in the year. But if the more coaching talent you can accumulate, the better off we are, as we saw last season in the 2023 season, one of the best coaching staffs ever assembled in Ravens history. And the college landscape at this point is pretty much the Wild West. There's players moving, there's coaches moving, there's all kind of opportunity. So throw some money at a hot offensive line coach or safeties coach or whoever it might be. I'm all for that completely.
We certainly had some outstanding creativeness on the part of, I think really Harbaugh is the person who did it, to send McDonald back to Michigan for an intern year as defensive coordinator. I'd love to see more of that sort of a relationship, with the Ravens having, you know, effectively two or three coaching AAA schools where they really, you know, understood the relationship they had and could send some things. I'm very much in favor of that happening again. In particular, if you're trying to develop young coaching talent, having management training of that type for them, it's got to be tremendously attractive as a as a recruiting inducement.
Completely, very well said. Position wise, I think you probably want to see if you can upgrade on the O-line. Mm-hmm. Maybe Shrevel Wharton can stay as the assistant O-line coach and continue to be groomed. I think you probably want to look at the secondary because there was some miscommunications, as we know, early in the year. A couple talented players that didn't find their square peg in the round hole type of situation. And if you can maybe upgrade there, that'd be very, very beneficial.
With you all the way on that. And I think, you know, this may be a case where they don't really dislike the guy they have, and it still might be time to move on in some of those cases. And if Harbaugh, one of the things that Harbaugh needs to bring is a culture institute or whatnot. He's got to be willing to get rid or promote above some people who he likes. He may really like Travell Wharton, and Travell Wharton may be okay in the long run. But I want the next great young offensive line coach here. Or I want a guy who's 45, has been doing it for a lot of years in college, like an Iowa offensive line coach, Kirk Ferentz or something. And you bring him in and he takes over your offensive line. And he might be here until the chair is completely moist.
Offensive line coaches are worth the weight in gold. Good offensive line coaches. We've seen the New England Patriots dynasty, now the Philadelphia Eagles, no matter who they plug in, the offensive line coach coaches them up. And there's really maybe no better benefit to a team than an offensive line coach that can coach up guys.
We probably have to give some credit to Warhop, late entry. Mm-hmm. There was definitely development on the offensive line as it went along. There's still some things going on. Footwork is worse than it's been since in a very long time. Not during the Joe D era have I really seen some of the problems occurring with footwork on poles in particular. There's been others as well. Is obviously the type of athlete they have now is more of a lumbering elephant, where it's not necessarily a bad thing. Falele's been very good in that regard in terms of when he's one-on-one against the man, he's been very effective. Is when he has to make a decision, move to level two or pull. Those three things are all difficult. And the other thing is they've got an undersized guy at center, and having another undersized guy to his left, I think really hurt him as a pass blocker this season. So what I'm coming out of this with is they really need to find the right mix of players to do this. But I'd be amenable to any number of strategies that would pick the next great offensive line coach. Intern, take the job immediately, be a distinct coaching responsibility, whatever it might be, with the ultimate goal to become the offensive line coach, 25, 26, 27, whatever it might be.
Completely agree there. Completely agree. That's probably one of the biggest questions going into the offseason, the left side of the offensive line. And the more you can back up the Brinks truck, Steve Bisciotti. The best offensive line coach money can buy, hopefully.
All right. Before we go to the free agent list, I want to go to last year's free agent list. I want you to tell me how many of the guys that the Ravens lost, and they have a lot of guys up for free agency this year, do they really miss this year? And I just give me I'll let you go 1 to 4 on each of these, 4 being they missed them the most, 1 meaning they didn't really miss them at all. Start with Odell Beckham.
2.
1. In my mind, okay. I don't think they missed. He was terrible. I mean, a Jadeveon Clowney, I'd say maybe a 2.
Okay.
Ronald Darby.
Just only when Flowers was hurt, I would say 2. If Flowers was healthy the whole way, I'd say 1. Darby. I mean, are we judging them off of how they played last year, or how they played this year? Because that's
It's really got to be Darby's this year and the Ravens' needs this year. That's how I'm doing.
All right, Darby this year, I'll say 1 because Darby did not play very well this year.
Darby had a bad year. Yeah, J.K. Dobbins.
I mean, you had Derrick Henry, so that'd be a 1.
I'd maybe say a 2 because one of the things you could have is maybe you could have had Dobbins instead of Henry and use that money somewhere else. But it's not much higher than a 1. I'll say that. Devin Duvernay.
1.
I would agree. Although the punt return game had some problems, I could see saying that's a 2. Gus Edwards?
It's got to be another 1. I mean, they got the job down on the ground. There's no question about that.
I agree entirely on that one because I think Henry is the same back and a lot better, frankly. Tyler Huntley?
I mean, there was no need for a backup. That has to be a one.
Yep. He didn't play well when he did. Sam Mustafa.
There was no need for a backup center. So I would also go again with one.
Yeah, I think I'm there as well. This is, you're getting the thing. Tyler Ott.
Tyler Ott, I thought long snapping was fine. So I'll give it one for that.
I'd say that as well. Delshawn Phillips.
I mean, Chris Board stepped up and played more than Delshawn Phillips. So I'll go one there as well.
I think I'd say a two on him because I think they had other weak side linebacker problems they could have maybe hopefully solved. Or maybe actually they lost a game out of Roquan, didn't they? So they might have
used it. They did one game. Yep.
So it's just a two, though. Patrick Queen?
I think they did miss Queen a little bit, maybe more than I thought, because I did think Simpson was going to be able to step up. I think they missed Queen's blitzing more than anything. The interior A-gap blitz was not as effective this year as it had been in past years. So I'll go with a two.
Okay. So I can see calling it a two. I probably call it a one just because I think he played really poorly for the Steelers. And I was extremely happy to have him playing against the Steelers in the playoff game when he played as poorly as I've ever seen him play. That was literally the worst Patrick Queen game. And his agent comes out saying he's sick afterwards, which is just the wrong timing for that.
Very true.
John Simpson.
I mean, I think McCary replicated his season pretty well, including the penalties. So one and a half, if I could.
I'm a three on Simpson. Now, here's the thing. Okay. McCary had twice as many penalties as Simpson this year, 14-7, which it shocked me, by the way, when I looked at that. But Simpson also graded out very well on PFF. Now, I didn't grade his play myself and whatnot, but in terms of the relativity, I think it's generally going to be well. He graded out like the seventh or eighth best guard in the league. It was really high. So I'm saying a three. They did get the job done cheaper, but I think they missed John Simpson actually, which I'm a little surprised that he might be the free agent that they missed the most. Geno Stone.
He did not play well in Cincy. He's a potential cut candidate. I do think there were times where they could have used a third safety. So I guess I'll go with a two for Gino.
Yeah, I'm with you on a two, and for those exact reasons, I think you nailed it. Rock Yassin.
One. Zero.
Okay.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And Kevin Zeitler.
I'd go with I think I'll go with a three on Zeitler. I'll go with a three.
I'm a four. I think he was the guy they for certain missed the most. But it's tough. They made two guard choices for over dollars. They tried to go young, and I think that they didn't find the player at either position who's going to be there for a long time. Falele could be, but I don't think they've necessarily found the guy yet.
I'd agree with that. Yeah, you know, we always talk about where are they going to save. And if you're going to save somewhere, I will never fault them for saving a guard because that's one of the places you should save. So from that perspective, I respect the decision.
All right. Fair enough. So now we'll talk about the 2024 UFAs. Start with Nelson Aguilar. Maybe talk about importance to try and get the buyback. And this is at what monetary level do you want him back? And let's come up with a system. You take him at a vet men contract, a small mid-level contract where you're willing to play some small bonus, or a one-year prove-it deal, or you're willing to sign them long-term. Those are the four levels.
All right, very good. I am at a vet men. Well, Nelson Aguilar, I think his hands, his issues with catching the ball showed up again this year, dealt with injuries, and I think the Ravens should be looking to upgrade wide receiver 3.
Completely agree. Chris Board.
I'm also at a vet men. I know he did some things or at least got some more playing time. It's hard to point to too many plays where he made an impact or a difference or improved defense. He was serviceable at this point in his career. I would say vet minimum.
Yeah, I think you need to save too, and I think they could lose Chris Board for that reason. He's also their special teams captain now, I believe. So he's, you know, I still think he's vet minimum. They can't give him a qualified contract because he left the team for a year, whereas they have one for Harrison in place, for example. Ben Cleveland.
I mean, I think it's time to cut bait. They just never gave him an opportunity, and I don't see them giving him an opportunity at this point. Hope for the best, wish him the best. If he wants to come back for that minimum, I'll take him, but I just don't necessarily see the two sides seeing eye to eye on that one.
So would your concern be that John Harbaugh would never play him even if he was here at the vet minimum? So you'd rather have a player that they could maybe develop as opposed to a fifth year Ben Cleveland, who it seems like is going to be a sixth offensive lineman and too deep on the injury list to come into a game.
Pretty much. Yeah. I think you surmise that well there.
All right. So Harrison has a qualified contract. He can make an extra million staying with the Ravens. That's a valuable friction tool to keep a guy in town. Could be he's going to be off and on the special teams captain for years to come, but any reason why a vet min plus a million contract doesn't work for you for Harrison?
That works completely. That's exactly what I wrote on my notes for the run sheet. Veteran salary benefit contract. Yep.
Josh Johnson.
I think it's time to go younger. I think between T. Martin, Lamar has enough sage experience just from seeing the clips. And I mean, Lamar's a veteran now. So I like to go younger there.
Okay. I'm in agreement, not in the room to hear what Johnson adds to that conversation, but I think it is time to cut bait. Josh Jones, there's a difficult one.
I would go, what was the second category? Slightly over vet minimum. Not quite mid-level, but between mid-level and vet minimum, whatever you want to call that.
Tell me what you're willing to pay. It's the easiest way to do it. Sorry.
Let's give him $3.5 million a year.
Okay.
Over
2 years. Okay. Uh-huh. I'd be fine with that. I think that's a good price to pay. I think the Ravens are in a tough situation with 3 tackles potentially walking out the door, and they really need to keep 2 of them and draft a third. So the next one is Patrick Ricard.
I think Patrick Ricard is a player that you give him the Ozzie Newsome treatment and say, go, we would like to have you back. Go find the best offer you can find and bring it back to us and we'll see what we can do. I would not want to go super high above the vet minimum. I do think he offers value to the team. He is a good player. He's a good locker room presence. That battering ram style suits Derrick Henry well. He's not worthless, but he's also a fullback that's aging, and I don't want to overpay for that either.
I completely agree on that. My number, I think, and I let him set the market, of course. The number I would give him to take to the market that say, hey, the Ravens are willing to pay me this would probably be something like 2 years, $4.5 million, and let him see if he can do better than that and maybe get into the comp formula if he doesn't. But I think the Ravens, actually, this would be one of the good things of the Harbaugh era we've seen, is they may be able to find that guy, you know, in the draft and develop another defensive lineman into a fullback.
You got to find places to save, and there's very few places to save better than fullback with the, just the rest of the league or a lot of the league not using them. So I completely agree there. I think we skip McCarty before we go into 6.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let's do that.
This is a tough one. This is maybe one of the most interesting ones, and it's flying under the radar a little bit. I was impressed by Andrew Voorhees' performance in week 18. And I think this is another, you give him a low ball offer, you say, stop it around and see what you can find. There's certainly some penalty issues here. There's some good spots. There's some downs. There's some bright spots, some sour spots. again, you just don't want to pay for past performance. You want to pay for future performance. And McCarrie's a player that you have a little bit of risk of that, in my opinion.
A lot of trouble with his play at tackle this year, because if you look at it, he was tackle, he's about a D, and at guard, he was about a B in terms of how I looked at it. So I'm not eager to get him back to play tackle, and yet I think the Ravens need two of their tackles back, and he might be the – if he was the fourth tackle on your team, if you're really going to have Josh Jones as your first backup tackle and McCarrie is your generalist who can also play tackle in an emergency, I'm fine with that. I don't want to pay a ton of money for that. And, you know, I'd go, I think I'd go 3 years, 12 to 15 million for McCarrie. That's where I would be. So I'm paying a little bit more and a substantial budget of the available cap dollars for it.
That's about right, though. And that would be a pay cut off of what he earned on his last contract. I think he was at six a year. So, again, quality offensive linemen are scarce, so I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, I may be a little bit behind the times in terms of the dollars too. That may be a million a year short. Okay, let's go move on. Steven Sims.
I'd let him walk. I don't think he brought much. We bring a returner that struggles catching punts. I'm okay.
Yeah, I'm okay too, and I think the next guy they find will bring something more dynamic to the offense. The Sims 15-yard run, I'm grateful for, but we need somebody who's going to really do something. I'm really, really pissed off that Deontay Hardy did not accomplish anything this year, and some of the comments were a little cryptic late in the season from Harbaugh about need to get his body right, and you also need to get him ready mentally, kind of thing. What does that mean? I mean, you know, I know what it means, but it also mentioned personal issues. And if that's really what held him up from playing for the 2024 Ravens, that's really bad.
Yeah. Making millions of dollars to play a game. You should have your head in the game. No question there.
All right. Let's go to the big one next is Ronnie Stanley. And so obviously a lot of the Ravens post offseason decision-making revolves around this. How would you resolve it?
Definitely the biggest question mark of the entire offseason. Left tackle is paramount. I thought he had a good year, not a great year. I think he should make – well, let me say this. Over the cap estimates his net worth at $10.1 million per year, which I think is low due to the scarcity of the position. I would give him 15 a year plus – the opportunity to earn incentives with a really banner year and see what comes. But again, just left tackles are probably the scarcest size, shape, athleticism pool in the on the field. So to me, it's worth it, even including the injury risk. He played well enough to earn one of those, again, about 15, 16, 17, 18 million. Not 20, but close.
So – he is a player who played. I'm going to look at this for 1 second here. So his average adjustment for the season looks like it was about 0.053. He played really right in the middle of the C range for me, as it turned out for the year. Maybe a C plus in terms of his year. PFF has him 31st ranked among tackles. So we're not too different there in terms of how we look at that. I would be hesitant to put a lot of money into Ronnie, even though I think that the pressures that he gives up, and that both PFF and I score for him and reduces value, are actually very symbiotic with Lamar. The notion that he doesn't really let the quarterback get taken down very often. He gives up a lot of pressures which impede the cone in some way, and Lamar is exceptionally good at dancing away from that and escaping the pocket and also throwing the football, even not losing his focus on those. I think your $15 million number is not bad for a base. The question is, what's your top end on that? So if you're going to put in incentives in that contract, how much are you willing to let him earn at the top end from a base of 15?
I'd go up to 20 top dollar. If he reaches all the incentives, plays 18 games, makes the Pro Bowl team, maybe second team all pro type of thing. I go off the 20. But you don't want to be in a position where, as you always say, holding the old maid card. Because the injury risk, although he made it through this season, that still persists.
Yeah, and he could retire on you and after two years, say, and that's certainly a possibility if you don't backload that contract. So structure matters a lot, but I'm right there with you. 15 plus five in incentives, and then we'll move that on. Okay, we'll let it go with that. Brandon Stevens, I think we talked about him earlier, so let's not revisit the same thing, but give him a dollar offer to walk. A dollar offer to take to the market. Or do you not even bother with that, since you might insult him and he wants to be a corner and he thinks you can still make money? And then you just say, hey, look, find what the market is. Come back to us and talk to about it, because we've maybe got another move for you if you're interested.
I make a move. I make an offer to him. I don't think it's an insulting offer. I'd give him maybe 3.5 a year over three. OTC values him at 4.8. I do think that his versatility to play overhang, to play deep, and to also play on the boundary has some value. It would be nice if you walk into the draft and you're not pressed for a third corner or a fourth corner. So I think you set the baseline there and let the other teams potentially bid it up for a compensatory value.
Okay. All right. I can see that. It does use up some critical dollars there. And you're talking 1 year, 3.5. You're talking 3 years, 3.5 AAV.
Probably two. I think I would do 2.7. Yeah, something like
okay.
that.
Okay, 2.7, which means probably 1 for 4. You cut them for three the second year, kind of thing.
Yeah, scant guarantees in the second for sure.
Okay, all right, I'd be okay with that. Brent Urban is the only guy on the defensive line who's a free agent.
It seems that Michael Pierce may be considering retirement. So apparently the players signed his helmet after the game. And I think we mentioned in the last episode that he carried a lot of weight, suffered injury. With all that being said, or even without that being said, Brent Urban is a veteran minimum 5-tech until he doesn't want to be, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. I would agree with that. And this is the first I'd heard about the Pierce helmet signing situation. Sometimes you get back from a game or you're traveling and then you do a bunch of analysis and you're disconnected from a lot of the crap. But that's interesting. I had not heard that. Mm-hmm. All right, Tylan Wallace.
This is a tough one because this is the kind of player that the Ravens love. He steps up when given the opportunity. He's a special teams ace. He's a locker room guy. He's made that big play in the Rams game 2 years ago, as we know. I would go 2 for 5. I don't want to overplay for a replaceable skill set. That's kind of where I am on that one.
All right. I would go 2 for 5 without codifying it as such, because he qualifies for the vet addition and the free $1 million of non-cap money. So you can have two of those contracts. Malik Harrison's got one. I give Wallace the other one, which makes him earn about 2.6, 2.7 million this next year. And then I give him the same amount. I tell him he's one of our guys, going to run it back. And I build, some of my special teams planning. Obviously fantastic year, 16 yards per target or thereabouts in terms of what he did. So remarkable year. It's not impossible he'll go to the market and better that. Not impossible.
As Duvernay did last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see with that one. We'll see with that one.
All right. Christian Welch.
No. I he's a special teams ace that doesn't necessarily show up on special teams. He's not leading the team in special teams tackles and very replaceable skill set. I like to keep him around, but I don't want to guarantee any money on that one.
All right. I'm in the same position. Tre'Davious White.
For the right price, I'm interested. And this is probably going hand in hand with Brandon Stevens, because if Stevens bites at your offer, then you're out of the market for White. If Stevens does balks at your offer, I think you're probably in the market for White. And it'd probably be somewhat pretty similar to the Ronald Darby contract, somewhat similar pedigree and age. So what is that? What was he? I think Trey White, or I'm sorry, Darby was 3.5, 1 year, 3.5. something like that, just to give you that backbone, that fallback insurance option would be my preference.
Yeah, be like a Jimmy Smith's late career contracts were in that range.
Yes.
Yeah, that could be. I think I'd be willing to do an incentive laden deal for Darby. I'm just afraid that he might be unhappy if he doesn't really get the playing time necessary. Sorry, for White, if he doesn't necessarily get the playing time to make it work. And so I think he's done enough. You know, he basically took Stevens' job during that Buffalo game for a time. And I'd be, you know, 2.5 with up to five with incentives is probably where I would go.
Very fair. Very fair.
Okay. Deontay Hardy, any desire to have him back?
No, I think they can replace him in the draft.
Completely agree. Trayvon Mullen, the invisible man that he's been for the Ravens these last several years.
Too long off the field. Just if you want to give him a camp tryout, sure, but definitely not. Don't want to guarantee money here. Let's before we go to the mailbag too, let's touch on our Darius Washington, because I think that's part of the mailbag, isn't it?
He's an RFA. So I guess the question is, what would you pay for our Darius Washington? We're not really covering all of that, which is a show we need to do, by the way, all of the guys who are coming out of year three and can be extended early, because it's critical opportunity missed if the Ravens don't get some of them this year. But Ardarius is a key one. What's your number on Ardarius?
So I probably am a little bit stingier on the money with Ardarius than most. OTC values him at 2.7. I think he has great utility as a hybrid nickel / back end guy. However, I want a rangy guy back there. I really do. I want somebody with range and length. So I guess we should mention the RFA, according to Brian McFarland. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the second round tender, which would be what the Ravens would have to do to, you know, keep him or get enough in return, because he was a UFA or UDFA. It's 4.5, I think. So that's significant money for in 1 year if they do the second round tender on him.
Yeah, I thought I even saw a higher number from McFarland. It was like 5.2 or something. So is it not insubstantial? And that was already more than I was willing to pay for an AAV on a 3-year deal, say. Yeah, so
I think. No, go right ahead. I'm sorry.
I think, you know, 3 years, $14 million is maybe what I'd be willing to pay for Ardarius. I think he's important. I think he's a very key, versatile defensive piece that they can make use of. I'm probably less negative on his ranginess, because I think he answered a lot of the questions about, particularly in his tackling toughness on the back end, being able to take on bigger men. That's about where I would be. And I wouldn't load it up with incentives or whatever. This is a security deal for Ardarius. He's basically securing the risk of injury to his future in the National Football League after the season. The problem is the salary the Ravens are going to have to give him for this year is so high that may not look attractive to him.
Right. I'd be closer to 3.5 a year on Ardarius short term. I just, again, you have to pick places where you're not going to spend, and slot corner and strong safety are two of the places on defense where you can. The Ravens have a long history of finding cheap, productive players. So I don't want to overpay. Maybe you pay a little bit more APY, but the guarantees are less and you can get out of it in a year or two if it doesn't work quite out for you. Doesn't quite work out for you. So that's I ought to be a little bit prudent with our Darius is the point I'm trying to make.
Okay. So it was 3 years for 17. And you could get out of the last year and it was 7, say, you'd be okay with that. That's a very team friendly contract. Probably can't happen, but still would be interesting. I think it's mostly about the upfront money, no matter what, for Ardarius.
Yeah. You got to play hardball sometimes. You can't take care of everybody. That's a fact.
All right. Well, fair enough. And I do think there are other players they can get who can do 80% at a fraction of the price for Ardarius, though. He's very good, and he really saved him this year. All right, listen, we'll save the rest for another show. Let's talk about some mailbag questions. We'll get through as many of those as we can. Tanner Noble, EDC said during his postseason presser, this year's offseason decisions regarding free agency are a lot easier than last year's, with the depth from 23 picked apart and the 24 team lacking depth in many areas. Do you foresee depth additions as a focal point in 25?
Well, the Ravens' way has been pretty much depth additions since the first Super Bowl, pretty much. So I definitely see that being a focal point, but it's not going to be many. I mean, it's going to be a cornerback here, a kick returner here, maybe a offensive lineman here. I don't think – I'm not expecting the Ravens to bundle a bunch of assets and not sign people to make a big splash, but I think they are – they do have pretty good depth at most positions. Safety and offensive line are probably the two where they definitely need –
big ones.
Yeah.
And I, as usual, they have 11 draft picks. I expect most of the depth that they get to come from the draft, not from free agency. This could be a year where they're opening the door of the spaceship again, like they did in 23, and accumulating a ton of comp picks for 2026. So we'll see how that works out. Mm-hmm. Brandon Croxton. Brandon Stevens' time at cornerback for this team is probably over, but would the Ravens be interested in possibly bringing him back as a deep free safety? He'd probably be cheap and allow Hamilton to go back to slot cornerback, dime backer, where he is more effective. First of all, agree with the part about Hamilton being more effective at slot corner and up closer to the line of scrimmage. They turned Hamilton from the ace of spades into the queen of hearts, as I always say, but they were replacing, they're replacing the two of clubs on the back end. It was still a good deal for them.
I'm pretty much entering this offseason thinking that slot corner is Marlon Humphrey's job. I think that's where he's going to excel in the interim, in the near future, and eventually transition to the back end. But Brandon Stevens, I mean, it really depends on where his mindset is. If he's trying to cash in as a boundary cornerback, perimeter cornerback, that's probably not going to work. If he wants to be a piece of the puzzle in the Ravens backfield, I'd love to have him back. So it's really where his head is.
And I agree. I think they'll offer him, and I think he'll pretty much refuse it. I think he'll want to play full-time somewhere. And I'm not even sure the Ravens can't find a better option for a rangy free safety on the back end from the draft, even from a rookie player. Second, third round pick.
He hasn't shown range on the back end. I mean, he's shown some tackling ability on the back end. But I'd be hard-pressed to find more than a handful of plays over his whole tenure where he looked like a rangy safety, to be honest.
He's hardly played back there. But even when he's played in cover three, the results haven't been so great. Not that the Ravens play a lot of it, but when Stevens has been on the back, it hasn't looked that great.
Indeed.
All right. Rasmus says, worth praising Harbaugh and EDC for not extending Stevens when every fan last year was demanding it. I'm not sure if that's really a question, but he did have a question mark at the end of it because I just copied this directly from Twitter. So yes, I would say yes, it is worth praising EDC for not extending Stevens and making him play the year.
I agree, Rasmus. Very good point. I think early extensions sometimes can be risky. You want to try to, and that's been DaCosta's ambition since he took over, early extensions. And 50-50, they worked out. I mean, some of them have been due to injury, but that's part of the game. And I'd rather let some of the players that are only ascent prove it one more year versus paying them early unless you get significant discounts, and significant discounts are few and far between at this point.
All right, without rehashing our discussion from earlier, you, Cole, just has a comment. That's cool. We always like your comments. A comment on roster construction. These playoffs are a confirmation of the Ravens' choices rather than repudiation. None of the teams left have a more potent pass attack than the Ravens, and not having Flowers really hurt. Make some tweaks and run it back.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. The tweaks I would like to see, perhaps a tertiary outside edge rusher that can complement Owe and Van Noy to maximize the push that the interior defensive line is getting. And I think you also need perhaps a better third wide receiver in the event of injury. Those would be the two tweaks I would recommend.
Yeah, I go along with both of those. I do hope Adisa Isaac still can be that guy, but Ajabo, I think I'm pretty well confirmed he's not that guy in terms of being the third. So they're going to need to draft an edge rusher in this draft. And they may need to sign a vet because that's really worked out for them. They've been extremely good at that. All right, Alvindo Royale, can you just put out a PSA that it's way better to have these tough Ravens losses than not? This is like directly contradicting you, my friend. The Orioles taught me this. Tough losses beat years of sucking all day, every day. I'm in complete agreement with the statement, by the way.
These tough losses definitely beat years of sucking. But I think the Ravens are held in high esteem because they field a tremendous roster almost year in and year out. And the measuring stick should be a little bit higher for a team that drafts and signs and coaches and fields a team of this caliber, that the at some point postseason victories and results should be expected. So I don't want to sound spoiled, but if you look at a team that enters the postseason with the third best odds to make the Super Bowl and doesn't make the conference championship, that's a little bit of a disappointment.
All right. I don't know that I agree with that statement, by the way, but that's okay. What I'll say about this is, before you use the word spoiled, the thing I was going to say was, so let me decode that. We're a bunch of spoiled bastards because our team has been successful and we're we've raised the bar and raised the bar and raised the bar to get more success. It's very hard to make a conference championship game, period. Even when you're a great team, the Ravens put together an amazing year effectively to duplicate their success of 2023, when from a DVOA perspective, for example, they were the fifth best team of the DVOA era. This year, they were the seventh best team of the DVOA era. That's an amazing, there's no team ever that's had two consecutive years like that in terms of the quality of the team. They played great football. After those first two losses, which one was heartbreaking, the other one was frustrating, like the loss of more than that, whatever frustrating squared is, the loss to the Raiders, which was somewhat determined by officiating. After that, they won, you know, they went 12-3. Actually, they went 13-3, didn't they? Before they lost to the Bills. It was an enjoyable season. I mean, it had me on the edge of my seat the whole time. They moved the ball at will versus most teams. They made good defensive teams look like bad defensive teams for a lot of it. Couple pitfalls, couple potholes, sure. I don't look at this season and say, boy, this really sucked. I look at this season and saying, you know, we were treated to great football for an entire year. We got to go to two playoff games. I'm not sure how I could find something that's terribly wrong with it, other than the normal frustration that goes with, we're one of the 31 teams who didn't win the Super Bowl.
I think if you have a period of 7 or 8 years where you are considered a Super Bowl contender and never make it to the Super Bowl once during that period and only make one conference championship game, that's where I feel the disappointment. And it's not because I personally need to see another Super Bowl championship. I've seen two in my lifetime. I want it for the players who have poured their soul into it. I want it for my children who are 11 and 9 years old, who have not seen it yet. And that's where I'm coming from. It's not a selfish desire, but I think with the amount of praise that the Ravens get year in, year out, after the draft, after free agency, during the season, in season, to have a team that's expected to contend, to only have one conference championship game appearance in 13 years, that is a little bit of a disappointment for me.
Okay, so in terms of having the really expectations of making the postseason or competing for a championship, it's really been 6 years, and the first of those 6 years, mm-hmm. they you know, Lamar was an unknown still, mm-hmm. after his first half season, and then he jumped off a scene, been an MVP. It's 3 out of 6. You know, then I look at it and they say they lost the end of 3 seasons to Lamar, 2 seasons really, because the third season it was just the end of the game they probably had already lost in Buffalo. Yeah. Uh-huh. But the other 3 seasons he was the MVP. And I'm having a hard time finding the problem with that. But anyway, I know we have a little bit different viewpoint in that, and that's fine.
Nothing with respect, Ken. I respect your view completely. And I hope you respect mine. That's all.
Yep. No, that's fine. And wanting it for other people is fine. And I'm also fine if everybody wants it for themselves. What I'm not fine with, the one thing I'm not fine with, if you say spend your 2027, 28, and 29 season ticket holder value on 2025 and 26. I do not want to do that. So
very fair.
My position is clear. I know.
No, it's fair. It's completely fair. Yeah. It's completely fair.
All right. Let's see. Jack Settleman, with reference to Sherman's tweet. Okay. Now this was about the extension to 29, which we talked about. Thank you for the question, Jack, about the what value would we put on a Darius Washington? So I think we're about in a similar range, 3 years, something backloaded as much as it can be, which is not going to be much. $14, $15 million you'd be okay with, or is that too high for you?
No, that's about right. As long as you're not married to it, as long as you can get out of it if necessary, if there's a Tavon Young type of injury or something like that, just don't pay replaceable positions because of locker room character. That would be my advice to the Ravens brass this offseason. You can find those guys. They found them. They found all the guys that we talk about signing at those positions. They pretty much found them all UDFA themselves. So that's where I am.
I by the way, I'm in complete agreement with you. Is there an example of a player that you would point to that they really overpaid because he was a locker room plus?
Brandon Williams would probably be one of them.
It's been a few years.
I would think of recently. I mean, I think you could maybe make that case for Roquan. I don't necessarily want to open that can of worms at the moment, but he was brought in to be a floor raiser, and then all of a sudden, the first half of the season, he was really struggling in coverage. The linebacker next to him was struggling. They made a change there. They made a change on the back end to allow him to not be a liability in coverage. And they were paying him to elevate others, not to have others needing to make changes so that others could elevate him. So that might be another example, potentially.
We'll leave that conversation for another day. I do think he had a lot of trouble with the three players you specifically mentioned around him were terrible. And it did really, even though he can elevate them, you can only elevate a guy who doesn't want to be there so much. But anyway, another time on that. Voss, been great doing this show with you all the year. I know the fans have really gotten into this show. They've really liked it. They have a lot of questions always. You can see just for the quality of the questions today, how much people are engaged with the show. We really appreciate all the listenership. Anything you want to say about your other venture?
Yes, I am on the cusp of opening a new restaurant concept in Finksburg, Maryland at 2900 Baltimore Boulevard. Name is Fiammata Italian Restaurant and Lounge, and we are hoping to open within the next couple weeks. I'm going to probably be having to take a step back from the Ravens analysis and content, but I look forward to doing a few shows with you, and hopefully my schedule will allow us to continue this series next year. Ken, it's been a complete pleasure doing this with you every week. Completely respect all of your opinions and really enjoy the back and forth and the philosophy and the talk. And I have tremendous compassion for everybody in Ravens Nation going through this tough part of the season. Didn't even watch college football championship game on Monday night because I just didn't even want any more football this week. So, but you know what? There's always next year. So let's go Ravens.
Yeah. We happened to watch it just because Maureen's a Notre Dame girl and sure. She went there. And that extra punch in the gut, but very nice to see Notre Dame get off the mat and make a game out of it late in the way that they did. Other folks out there, thanks so much again for listening. If you could do anything for this show, the thing we would ask is a 50-word, 5-star review is ideal, or telling somebody else just about this show. Just a minimal things we ask. Like and subscribe if you're listening to this on YouTube, please. For Voss Larikos, this is Ken McCusick saying goodbye. We'll talk to you next time on Friday Morning GM. Thank you.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.